Good morning, everybody. The verifiable claims call just ended, so a few people are still popping over from that call, so we'll wait just a minute. But in the meantime, the agenda for today's call is here. While we're waiting, does anybody want to volunteer to be a scribe? On our scribes list, we have near the top Benjamin Young, Bob Dolan, Christian Lundquist. Any of you up for being scribed today? Dan Burnett, Dan Pate. Do we have a volunteer for scribe? David Lean.
This is Lionel. I'm ready to volunteer, but I might need someone to switch me at the half hour point. So how's half a scribe?
Well, let's see if we can find a scribe through so we don't interrupt things.
Hey, Chris,
but I may take you up in your...
Sorry, Heather, okay. Here. I'm happy to take on half a scribe with Lionel if you can't find someone to.
No, I think that's great. If you guys are up, let's plan that. So
okay, so around the
before.
On the 7:30, you'll take over.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so we'll start off with our regular intellectual property note. Anybody can participate in these W3C credential community group calls. However, if you've not agreed to the group's intellectual property policy, we can't consider substantive contributions. Basically, you can go to the W3C community site and join there if you wish to make a substantive addition to a standard or one of our other documents. In general, we use IRC. If you are connected on the call without being on the IRC, I encourage you to also get on the IRC. We use it to cue speakers during the call to coordinate it. All you have to do is type Q plus to add yourself to the queue. And if you like, you can do Q plus and what it is you want to talk about. If you're not on IRC, do ask to be put on the queue. In all discussions, questions, et cetera, in the queue, please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always do a Q plus again. We have two scribes. Do we have, let's see, did we say who the scribe is in the, currently Kim is trying to associate the calls with various people. Kim, do you want to, and who's missing or?
Yeah, actually, I think I'll turn it around this time. Please write present plus, type present plus in IRC. It's getting harder to identify people. I mean, it's good. People are using SIP, but I see things like PSTN-4-blah-blah-blah. So if you are not in IRC, but you're dialed in, just quick, tell me, identify yourself, and we'll make sure you're accounted for.
If you're, there's a URL that's on the W3C site, which is a web page that allows you to log into the IRC. I personally use an app called IRC Cloud. which leaves, and there are a lot of other IRC apps that are out there. So today we're going to be spending hopefully most of the call on our topic of proof of personhood. But we do have some review that we need to do in the beginning. We always start off with introductions and reintroductions. If you are new to this call, we ask that you just simply put in Q+ and we'll give you an opportunity to briefly introduce yourself. So just type in Q+ or speak up, and we will. Okay, so Udi, why don't you go first?
Hi, I'm Udi Shapiro from the Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel, but physically presently at Wengen in Switzerland. And I'm a computer scientist, was an internet pioneer, then for a couple of decades was doing biology, and now I'm back to internet issues. Specifically, I'm interested in e-democracy and the foundations needed for that, and distributed identities are part of the needed foundations, and that's why I'm here.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
MTFK, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Robert. I'm from Poland, but originally, right now living in Austria. I'm representing Lab10 Collective from Graz. Basically, this is a community building self-sovereign identity solution and a new blockchain, which will try to combine together the identity issues which we are facing all together here, and this is why I'm here, to learn a little bit more and maybe a little bit share also with that what we are doing there. Thank you.
Great. Welcome. Brian Osoris.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So this is Brian Ford, actually. Thank you for inviting me. So I just to introduce myself briefly, I'm a professor of computer science at EPFL. I've been working in decentralized and distributed systems and security and privacy for many years. I proposed this idea of pseudonym parties for quite a few years ago, and we're working on trying to gradually make it real. But in any case, for a long time I've been interested in democracy, voting, ways to develop technology to support democracy and secure social interaction more reliably. So good to be
here. Great. Thank you. Okay, for reintroductions, we always have at least somebody from the community reintroduce themselves. Bob Dolan or Christian Lundquist, are you here today? Dan Burnett or Dan Pape?
Hi, Dan Burnett, yes, I'm here.
Yeah, why don't you reintroduce yourself to everybody?
Yes, so my name is Dan Burnett. I am. I just recently joined Consensus, and I'm working on the standards team there. For the last few years, I've been an independent consultant doing web and internet standards, most recently focused on WebRTC. I am one of the co-chairs of the Verifiable Claims Working Group, which is the group that's standardizing the data model that's being used for some of the work that's discussed in the CCG. So it is a standards track working group, and so that's where work tends to go after it gets incubated in a community group like this one. Happy to be here. I joined originally because of personal interest. I just think that the kinds of approaches to dealing with the problems around identity, the approaches that we're taking in this group, are the ones that will lead to a better world for individuals and the stuff they want to do in real life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate all your contributions. Next part of our agenda is a quick review of announcements. We do have a GitHub webpage where we've listed a couple of announcements. If people have other announcements associated with the group, you're welcome to do pull requests to add them to the webpage. In particular, the My Data conference is happening at the end of August in Finland, and I know a number of people are going to be participating there. Rebooting Web of Trust is September 26th in Toronto. Since our last call, the URL for joining is now available, so that's rwatch7eventbrite.com. If people want to participate, we'd love to have you. Next, we have TPAC. So one of the things that's going on is the DID incubated proposal is reaching a point where we believe that we can move it to the next step, which requires us forming a working group, as we did with the verifiable claims. Thus, we need to do a little bit of evangelization with other communities within the W3C. And the place to do that is TPAC in Lyon, France, October 23rd through 26th. This group often meets at IIW. If people aren't going to be at TPAC, IIW is running the same week, which was unfortunate, but just the way it is. So I suspect there'll be some people that are members of the group at that event. So any other quick announcements or reminders before we move to the next item?
Christopher, there's me and Andrew on the queue.
Yeah. Kim?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick note that I need to add to the announcements page. I'll submit a pull request that we will be having Scribe and Minute production training August 17th, currently at noon Pacific time. More time slots may be made available that are more international friendly, but either way, we'll be recording it and scribing it. And so we'll release the instructions so everyone can see how to do it. That's all.
Great. Thank you very much. So if people aren't aware of it, we have all of our meetings are public and open. As you've been watching Lionel scribe away, we scribe them. We also have a recording and sort of an automated technique to make sure that they all are put on our website. Okay, and AC Hughes.
Hi, Andrew Hughes. Just to note that Sovereign Foundation is having a face-to-face on the Monday and Tuesday prior to the My Data Conference, so August 27th, 28th. I don't have exact details. I'll see if I can find the email and post it up.
Is that in Helsinki?
In Helsinki,
or someplace else? Great. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Moving on. Status of work items. Excuse me. Action items. Somehow I have an extra character here.
I've always thought you had extra character, Chris.
And so at this point, we don't have any. At this point, we don't have any action. Did I screw up here? Is issue is open label action item has an extra quote in it. Okay, well, any case, any people want to need to talk about an action item?
Yeah, this is Joe. I've got myself in the queue.
Go ahead, Joe.
My question, I guess this is for Andrew, and I know you reported, if not last week, the week before, where are we with the video about how to create the respec?
So the unedited video is on YouTube. I'll get the link to it into the minutes. There it is. Thank you, Heather. I still haven't gotten to clipping out all the unnecessary segments from it.
Okay, cool. Because I need to go do that for Amira. Sounds like
it. For people new to the community, all of our or many of our documents use a GitHub-friendly format called Respect. It has two advantages. One is that it, you know, basically has all the header and other information that and formatting that makes the specs look good and be consistent across the various W3C specs. But it also has some advantages in there's some specific GitHub plugins that allow for viewing and editing and commenting on the content and PR requests easier. Okay, Manu, go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick ping on the DID spec. Unfortunately, I think all of the editors, including myself, have been really busy and unable to move that forward. So we're behind schedule on that. We're behind schedule on the DID use cases. We're behind schedule on getting feedback from companies that want to see DIDs become a working group. So the general theme is we're behind schedule. So I don't quite know what to do about it yet, other than see, you know, if that's going to change anytime soon. My hope is that I'm going to get some time. So the good news is that the charter is ready, I think. We haven't gotten anyone arguing against it, meaning the content in there. The primer, I think Andrew's got it in a shape where we can at least start messing with it, so I think that's good. But the spec itself and the use cases and the feedback from the community, votes from the community, that's not there. So we need to prioritize that somehow in the group over the next couple of weeks.
Thank you very much. We'll move on now to work items. That also is a GitHub repo, and we have a wide variety of work items that are in progress. What we're seeking right now is if people want to have any particular reports or results on progress on work items. Chris Weber, go ahead.
I just wanted to say there was kind of a period where OCAP LD was there was implementation work being done, and there is implementation work being done, and we're making good progress, but there wasn't really an opportunity to work on the spec. But I'm happy to say that there's been some pretty good recent spec work again. My IRC client just froze up, so I can't paste it in the channel at the moment, but we've had a there it is. So we had a pretty significant PR that I think the group maybe ought to know about, which is that we reworked things that instead of the root of the first capability actually being the first kind of delegated capability document, we've moved it so that the capability, that the target itself is a capability document, which turns out to be pretty useful. It means that targets can effectively invoke themselves, which is mostly relevant to kind of blockchain type usage. I'm not going to go into detail, there's another interesting issue that if people from the kind of OCAP-y type community want to pay more attention to, it would be this one. But anyway, I think there's good progress being made, and I just thought that it would be good to have that update.
Thank you very much for the update. I think there's some real potential in OCAP work. It's clearly a new architecture that people are going to take some time to get used to, but I think it's powerful. Any other reports on work items? Manu, go ahead.
Yep, I have one, and it's OCAP related as well. We've actually just shipped OCAP implementations to customers this past week, and we have like really good, the feedback so far is really good, and customers have no idea that they're using them behind the scenes, but we have learned quite a bit on how to implement this stuff over HTTP and use OCAPs to do authorization over HTTP on top of the HTTP signature spec. So the good news here is that the specs that we have, like HTTP signatures and the OCAP work and the DID auth over HTTP, are coming together nicely. They're clearly, they're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but we have real code running on real customer systems, and it seems to be working so far.
Thank you. So our next item is a brief recap of last week's Decentralized Web Summit. So the Internet Archive hosted a fairly well-received event in two parts. There was a Builders Day at the Internet Archive of about 120 people that were mostly developers and engineers to try to do a little bit of facilitation on what the future of decentralized web might be. And that was followed by a more open event at the San Francisco Mint, which I think had about 400 people. I'm not sure. But it seemed like, there's a very large community of people there. I saw a lot of demos of decentralized web stuff that, is not, directly associated with the decentralized identity community. But I also saw, it felt like a good quarter or a third of the people in one way or another were talking about or were planning on using decentralized identifiers, et cetera. So it was a really good, solid event. Does anybody have any comments from the Decentralized Web Summit who was there? Dan, is that your...
Can you hear me?
Okay, go ahead.
A couple points of feedback. I know you just talked a little bit about DID auth, HTTP signatures, some of these things. We have implemented a form of DID auth with basically it's a JWE that wraps the JWT and doesn't have forward secrecy or repudiation, but it is it does do DID auth and it's between the hub endpoints. So our mandate is to square that away with folks like Sovereign who have their stuff based on NACL and come up with a unified flow. It basically represents the number 10 flow in the document from Marcus and the rest of the folks who worked on that at RWAT. We fully intend on open sourcing this as soon as it has a quick code review. But if we can add the couple features it's missing, this will be a pretty much a quote-unquote standardized way with JWE and JWT that even certain curmudgeons at our own institution can't possibly hate. So that should be something I would hope that people could use as one option.
Fabulous.
And, yeah.
So some context, something that wasn't announced that we probably should have is that the DID auth document from rebooting, which was sort of a survey of various authorization and authentication techniques that could use DIDs, as well as some proposals and possibilities there, was released as a final draft. I posted that in the chat. Anybody else want to say anything, report out from the Decentralized Web Summit? Is Marcus here or Kim? Do you have any quick comments?
I can talk about it. Yeah, so we did have, we had two panels especially focusing on DIDs. One was run by Marcus, one by Kalia. And we did have excellent coverage of DID methods, especially in Marcus's panel. I don't know, maybe 6 different DID methods were represented. So that was really great to have that breadth. We had a range of audience, you know, the first one very technical, second one asking more about use cases. There were great questions, you know, ones that we know of and are sort of ticking down the line a little bit, you know, around trust, like sort of which DID methods are reputable ones, sort of things like that, that are sort of a separate layer of what we're talking about. We had another great question around, should we be building this, which, you know, I like to point to always to the security and privacy models and the verifiable credentials specification. You know, it is clear that one of the things we need to be doing is getting to the point where we can write more about best practices. So it was good to hear the questions and sort of understand which aspects didn't make sense and which resonated. That's all I have.
Thank you. Marcus?
I basically shared the impressions that you, Christopher, and Kim already described. It was a really fantastic event, a lot of energy and many people. Identity was only part of it, right? But I think it was a very important part. And in total, I think we had probably more identity-related sessions with the panel and workshop and other things. So it was great. And regarding the DDoS paper, thanks for publishing that. Thanks to all the authors and contributors and Shannon, Apple client, for formatting and publishing it. It's not a spec, right? It's not a DDoS spec. I say that every time it comes up. But it's, like you said, Christopher, a survey or overview of thoughts on what DDoS could look like.
Thank you. Dan, you have the floor left.
Great. Yeah, so a couple things from DWeb. One, you know, the first day to build there, I was sitting there with a lot of the browser vendors, and, you know, we've been talking internally to edge teams who are getting more excited about this as a possibility. But one note was that during the talk with the browser vendors, it was kind of clear that how they see, a lot of them see DWeb, Google and Firefox, is low-level components. And Google specifically, after talking to Alex Russell, really had like a dim view of any need for decentralized identifiers. Alex has been an opponent of this stuff for a long time. So that was a little distressing. But some of the good things that came out of it is I sat with Tim Berners-Lee for a little while and was able to kind of talk with him about the idea of these data stores and why they matter. And, you know, obviously Solid is in that same spirit. And they said that they'd be willing to align. So potentially if, like, the people leading the space, like Sovereign, Microsoft, Solid, if we could come together and have a shared perspective, that would be pretty cool. I think that should be something that everyone, you know, sets out as a goal. And the other thing that I wanted to kind of talk about that came up during, I think, Marcus's session was, and we have talked about it in GIF, is we see W3C as like the open, you know, for DIDs and DID methods and specs, like the open registry or place where they would accept anyone that could essentially put a DID document out that is compatible. And we're looking at, like, what would GIF's role be in terms of going a little bit beyond that, in the sense that, not being exclusionary, but if we were to have industry standards around quality that were more subjective, right? Because you can make a DID method that technically does the right thing, but would it be proper for a group that wasn't the open W3C to say, look, like, you know, we have a more invasive test suite or more, you know, something that kind of really tries to suss out fine-grained details, and what's the place of that, and is that a good idea? So that was something that we, you know, talked about.
And we should probably have a dialogue about that at a future meeting. That we certainly, if it can be tested, the W3C is a good place for it. If it is more subjective, then probably there needs to be another answer. So Anyhow, it was a good event. I think in our goal of trying to move the DID spec to the W3C as a working group, there were enough people there that will also be at TPAC in the end of October that I think we had some positive influence, and they can see that, you know, hey, there's a bunch of different companies doing it. Okay, so we're going to close that conversation and move to our main conversation, which is proof of personhood. We're going to start with the first, few minutes with Brian, who basically shared with us this document as a starting point on this discussion. Brian, why don't you share with us where this all came from and lead us through a 5-minute intro to the.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks. Proof of personhood, the whole idea comes from the recognition that I had quite a few years ago that a tremendous amount of the internet's brokenness and insecurity derives from a Sybil attack problems. It's just a very fundamental problem, the fact that the internet doesn't have a way to distinguish between real and fake people or real and fake users. So I'm on slide 2. This manifests in a tremendous number of forms, from online stuffing online ballots. Any attempts at e-democracy tends to be undermined by this problem. Upvotes, downvotes, reviews, fake reviews, things like that. Sock puppetry of the type Wikipedia faces all the time, where misbehaving users try to create fake personas to support their own causes and make one person look like a crowd. Bot armies pushing fake news, in an increasingly larger and systematic and better funded, even nation state funded way. And then generally the problem of the tension between anonymity and accountability. I have been a privacy and anonymity proponent for a long time, and there's often a perceived strong tension between the right or ability to participate anonymously online versus the vulnerability that creates to the whack-a-mole problem, where if an anonymous user misbehaves, you can try to ban them, a website or a service can try to ban them, but they can just resurface under another account or many accounts, right? And this problem has been recognized as fairly fundamental for decentralized systems for a long time. I suggest everyone read John Dusser's classic paper, The Sybil Attack, from 2001. There's a link in the slide. There's a few links in the slides if you just click on them. And many solutions to this problem have been attempted and even put into place in many different ways. If you're interested in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin's proof of work is just another attempt that tries to address this, but fails in some pretty spectacular ways. It succeeds a little bit, but then really fails to solve the real problem. So that's the broad spectrum of the problem. Let's go to slide 3, and I just want to map out the overall solution space just very briefly to provide some context. The most obvious approach that most people come with, the obvious solution tends to be just use real names, verify people's identities. And that, to some degree can be a solution. I'll get to the, ups and down, upsides and downsides of these in a minute. But then there are other approaches. You can use biometrics. You can alternatively, instead of identifying people, you can impose some kind of investment, some kind of artificial barrier to entry, such as solve CAPTCHAs, solve proof of work challenges, invest in some stake or something like that. Fourth, there's a classic series of work from the peer-to-peer networking days based on graph analysis of trust networks, which is very interesting. I'll get into it in a minute. And then finally, pseudonym parties, which Linus will get into after I just briefly introduce it. Just to at a very high level, point out the strengths and weaknesses of each of these known approaches to the Sybil identity problem. On slide four, the real name, using real names of verified identities. Of course, this is very, this is the kind of thing that governments and banks do all the time. Social networks like, Twitter and Facebook do this for some people, like for celebrities to create the blue check marks and, things like that. Some of the downsides are it's privacy invasive. It makes you show IDs, send people IDs online. Many people, especially poor or undocumented people, often don't have IDs or ready access to IDs. It can be expensive and cumbersome from the verification process, and it's not that secure for at least two reasons. Fake IDs are not actually, reasonably convincing usable fake IDs are actually not that expensive or difficult to get. And finally, there's very centralized, fairly easily exploitable single points of failure. Any verifier that's compromised or coerced, any one verifier can generally potentially create many, many Sybil identities. So it's vulnerable to severe centralization problems, just like the centralized secure certificate authority system and similar systems. So moving on to biometrics. So this is, of course, similar and closely related to the identity approach, where you rely on devices that can read people's fingerprints, iris patterns, etc., record them in a database, and later verify them as a way to verify identities. So this has some appeals. It's in principle efficient, automated, secure from a biometric sense if it's well done. Maybe most importantly, people always have biometrics. They don't need to. It kind of works for undocumented people. So partly as a result of this, it's seen widespread use in some parts of the world, notably India and United Nations. But there's huge recognized downsides. So the privacy issues are even more even worse, especially surveillance risks, especially associated with the massive database that you have to create with all this biometric data. When you want to use this to prevent against Sybil attacks, you have to deal with both false positives and false negatives, unlike when you're just trying to, unlock a device with a fingerprint scanner where you only really care about one side. But I could get into that more as needed. And again, it still has a very central vulnerabilities in that one hacked scanner or scanning point or authority could still basically create many fake biometric fingerprints or pattern fake people, without it being very readily detectable. So proof of investment, the whole category of schemes of which CAPTCHAs, proof of work, proof of stake, proof of storage, proof of this, that, the other. These are basically artificial barriers to entry that make it harder for anybody to get, a large number of these things. But anyone who has money or resources or time or, whatever, can get more. So it fails to be, democratic in the one person, one vote sense. And basically, you know, the more money, the more time, the more resources you have, the more benefit you get. So that's not really what we're looking for. Slide seven, there's the category of trust network graph analysis, which is a classic idea proposed by systems, peer-to-peer systems, such as Sybil Limit and SumUp. Those are links you can click. I encourage people not familiar with those approaches to read them. So they're very interesting from an academic perspective. The essential problem is they require they assume that a Sybil attacker can create many nodes cheaply, but has a hard time creating edges between the attack network and the honest, supposedly honest network. The big problem with this assumption is that secure and usable trust networks that actually satisfy this property don't exist. And a lot of research has shown that they don't exist, that, you know, networks like Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera. There's a lot of people that friend other people promiscuously. And basically, you know, an attacker who wants to get an attack edges will have no problem completely defeating this kind of attack. And also, even if it is working, it only defends against, you know, one or a few attackers trying to cheat a lot. It doesn't protect against incentives where, you know, many people have an incentive to cheat a little. Just add, you know, one or two or three additional fake people, right? So that's the background. And so finally, all of those limitations of the other known solutions really led to my proposing this idea of pseudonym parties, where the idea is we want Sybil resistance without needing people to identify themselves in terms of names or attributes or biometrics or any of those properties. Now, that's not to say that this is incompatible. It definitely is compatible with identity schemes such as sovereign identity, where sometimes you want users to be able to disclose verified attributes such as their age, you know, their drinking age or whatever like that. But from the perspective of pseudonyms parties perspective, this is the property we're trying to get as an orthogonal property to all that, kind of a personhood attribute. And this attribute, we want to be orthogonal and independent of all actual attributes of a physical person. We just want it to be a convincing and secure token, say a cryptographic token, for example, attesting that the holder of the token represents one real person, and it would be very difficult for one person to get many such tokens, right? And I will let Linux get into the details. The essence is that the idea is to recognize that that real people live in the real world with physical bodies. At least that's still the case. It might not be forever, of course, beyond whatever singularity you care to envision. But for now, it's still the case. And we can leverage the fact that real people still have one real body and can only be in one place at a time. And this allows us to essentially verify personhood, create a personhood basis that requires no ID checking, no biometrics, and no trust network. Nobody needs to know or verify each other. So it, in principle, should work just as well, for example, for poor or undocumented people as biometrics without many of the creepy privacy risks, surveillance risks. Of course, it's, there's no silver bullet. There's no free lunch. It has some downsides or challenges. In particular, it obviously requires organization in the physical world. And that's, one of the challenges we've been working on exploring. Can it actually be practical? Can it be made efficient and secure? It requires people to show up periodically to something, to some kind of events. The thesis is that You know, in the real world, people tend to like to show up to events of interest to them, you know, meetups, conferences, workshops like this, and so on. And so we'd like to be able to piggyback, you know, we envision piggybacking mm-hmm. this mechanism with many of those types of events. You know, of course, this, you know, this is a cost, a physical world organization cost, and whether that's reasonable and how to do it specifically is very much an open question. So with that, sorry I went longer than I should have. I will turn the floor over to Linus, as you see fit, Chris, to get into the details of the experiments we're running.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll let Linus continue and we'll hold the questions until after that. So his presentation is at this URL.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. Thanks, Brian, for the introduction to why we want to have a proof of personhood and a little bit what it's about. So I directly skip slides 1-5 and go directly to slide number 6. Just to give a small overview of what we want to do. So we want to have a 1 token per person, not more. If somebody does not participate, of course, you will not get a token. And how we want to do that is we want to have some kind of party in where we have people that get verified that they are a person, but not identified who they are. What can you do with such a token? On slide number 7, just a single, some examples of what you can do with a token. So you can create a request, and then any service can, in fact, ask you to sign their message. And some technical details also, these tokens can then be used to create a group signature that also has a tag, so you can re-identify somebody within a given context. Let's say you have a vote and you want to make sure that everybody votes only once, so you get the attendee's sign within a given context, and then if attendee signs twice with his same token, then on the voting side, you will be able to see, oh, this guy already voted, and you will take into account his vote only once. If at the same time, Wikipedia also asks attendees to sign to be able to edit, they will not be able to collude with the voting service to see this guy edited this article and he voted such and such. So different services, they cannot collude between each other to know the tag of the attendees that they create. So just some details on how we plan to use these tokens. The pseudonym party themselves on slide 9 is quite a simple setup. So we have some organizers that organize the party. We suppose that we are in an antitrust setting. So as long as you trust one of the organizers, you're good. There's some kind of configuration that defines where, when the party takes place, what is the purposes. Then, of course, you need the attendees. They will form the anonymity group. And finally, you have a room where you put everybody inside. So on slide 10, you see that we have 4 attendees and 2 organizers. Each attendee creates a private public key that is just used for this one party. So at every new party, every attendee creates a new private public key pair. And now the party goes on, people can leave, they can enter, and at the given moment, what we call the barrier point, you do not allow anybody to enter the room anymore, you only allow people to leave the room. So on slide number 11, there is 1 attendee leaving the room, and in fact, both organizers scan the public part of the attendee's key. And the second attendee leaves the room, and the organizers always scan the public keys. On slide 13, you have 3 attendees having left the room and 1 attendee left. And then on slide 14, you have all the attendees are out. And now all the organizers are supposed to have the same number of public keys on their device. Now, on slide 16, a short overview of what the organizers do afterwards. So afterwards, the organizers need to come together and agree on what are the public keys. So there might be an organizer who missed scanning a public key. There might be an organizer who tried to cheat and added public keys that he created his own. And to arbitrage between the organizers, what we propose is that we have somebody videotaping the whole event. And then using the videotapes, the organizers need to be able to arbitrage and say, okay, you forgot to add this public key, or this public key here, you added it maliciously, so you need to remove it. Once all the organizers agree on the public keys, they create some kind of collective signature, and then this is will be called the party transcript. Now, each attendee can take this party transcript, which holds the list of all the public keys, and that is key pair, and then he has his POP token. And with his POP token, using these anonymous group signatures, he can prove that he is part, that he was part of the party without having to divulge which one of the attendees he is. And using these linkable group signatures, we can even re-identify him within the within a context without giving away his identity over multiple services. So in the end, we have finally on slide 19, we have one token per person. And if at least one organizer is trusted, we don't have any additional tokens by malicious organizers. We have some kind of fairness if we have observers who record a party. So if they videotape the whole event, we can scale this thing by having multiple simultaneous parties. So here in Switzerland, it could be somebody in Zurich, somebody else in Geneva, making parties at the same time. And then you cannot go to the same, then you cannot go to two parties at the same time. So you will only get one token. And yes, as I said, we have this per service tagging by using these linkable anonymous group signatures. Some of the things that we are doing now, so we have some technical issues with these linkable ring signatures are quite big. We would like to have perfect forward secrecy. So in case your private key gets divulged out in the open, that nobody can see all the things you signed. And then also how to create viral parties. So if you have been at the party, that you are also trusted to create your own party. But of course, there are some issues. Who is really trusted to create more parties? We're currently also testing this and having small parties, pop parties at the EPFL. For the moment, we have 10 to 20 persons who show up regularly, and we try and are creating an application where people can create their private public key pairs, and then the organizers, they can scan these keys. So this is where we are currently, and then slide 21 and following are appendixes for some more details for the whole party. Yeah, so if you have any questions.
So thank you very much, both of you, for sharing your ideas on the pseudonymous parties. Part of the reason why I wanted you guys to come and join us is that there are a number of things that are going on in our community. We have a large percentage of people who are involved in sort of the pseudonymous and human rights side of identity. That's why we were part of the UN ID 2020, we have pairwise pseudonymous work in one of the proposals from Sovereign Network. The BTCR leverages the pseudonymity of Bitcoin, et cetera. So we wanted to try to do some things there, particularly the Amira use case around, you know, how do we enable a software engineer to create an anonymous, pseudonymous identity so that they can do human rights work. One of the topics that has been raised as an important one for future rebooting of Web of Trust. I'll close with that the next rebooting Web of Trust is in September. I'd love to try to implement some of this type of thing, or at least plan it there. And then we have this kind of interesting thing where we have some members of this community who will be at IIW in Santa Clara, and we have some that will be at TPAC in Lyon you know, maybe we could try creating some Amira class, you know, proof of personhood in a context of identity engineers at those two events. That would be cool. So the queue has a number of different people. We will start off with Drabev. Go ahead.
Hi, all. It's Bogdan. So first of all, I have a small comment. Graph analysis, in particular, about cheapness of edge, that to create edges between people or friends or links is cheap. I think it is actually not true. It depends on network and on the meaning of edge. But from my practice and from some experiments that I've done myself, for example, out of about 200, 300 friends, only maybe 5-7 people added new fake identity to their friends. So real people, for example, on Facebook, from my experience, do not add unfamiliar people to their friends. This is one point to this promiscuous friending. And another point is that current friending, the meaning of these edges is not clear. What does it mean to be a friend or a connection on LinkedIn? Its meaning is diluted. If we create a network where this edge means that when you create this edge that you signify that you know that this person exists in real life and you vouch for this, and if it appears that it will not be true, it is not true, you will have a reputation cost, then people will be even more strict with creating these edges. So I think graph analysis is going to work. For me, it's I'm quite sure. Regarding the pseudonymous parties, I posted a few questions, so just also a few comments and questions. One thing is that these tokens.
Yeah, let's hold the if your questions or whatever that are on the list. We only have a couple of minutes left in the call, so I wanted to hold the last couple of questions for the guests, and of course, if you include them on the CCs in any emails to the list, that is also good. So.
Sure, so Heather, shall I respond quickly to those points, those two points?
Sure, please.
So you know, those are good points. I don't discount the possibility that it may be possible to create an adequate trust network that actually acts as a trust network, that, you know, in which edges are adequately expensive and people are incentivized strongly enough not to friend promiscuously or things like that. I just note that that's the kind of thing that PGP has been trying to do for decades with the web of trust, and it's still not done. You know, I'm absolutely not saying it's not possible. I would love to see it happen, but getting the required security tends to work against the usability of, you know, the part of the success of social networks like LinkedIn and Facebook is they're really easy to use, but then that usability means that it's there's very low friction to create friendships, and that's you know, that's part of what the business model of those networks are based on. So solving that security versus usability problem is quite hard. And back to your first point, where you noted that many people don't promiscuously friend. You're absolutely right. Many people don't, but many people do. And an attacker who wants to create a Sybil attack doesn't care about all the many people who don't promiscuously friend. But, you know, as long as there are enough, and there don't need to be that many people who promiscuously friend everyone who invites them, you know, as long as there are a few, you know, any Sybil attacker can really get a lot, you know, of edges that way and basically can completely defeat the system. So, again, I'm not saying that the graph analysis could not ever work, but certainly the you know, the context, the environment for it working is not there currently.
Heather, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I had this question early in your presentation, and you might have answered it. It was just concern about the correlatability of the individual token that is used to identify that person is a real person in that space. I understand that does each person have their own, like, DID, and then all of those DIDs are bundled together in the group as, like, the group signature and then goes away. Like, if a hacker got that group signature, could they extract out all of the individuals and reverse engineer it? And, yes, I know there's a ridiculous amount of time to do that, but this is exactly the type of challenge that hackers love. So I'm just curious if you guys have thought about, like, the correlatability of the identification numbers that are used to clarify,
right, very, very good question. So the thing is, the system is designed so that, because this has to be a periodic process anyway, because, you know, people are born, people die, people join, it has to be a periodic process anyway. And so each of these pseudonym party tokens that you get is basically, it has to be limited lifetime, usable for some period. And each time you're an attendee in a new pseudonym party, you can, and the expected mode of operation is you're basically going in afresh with a brand new public key it doesn't even information theoretically have any information that could tie you to, you know, past instances, past public keys that you've generated for past pseudonym parties. Now, you might link those, pseudonym parties or uses of those pseudonym parties over time. You might choose to for various reasons, but that's an aspect of the application, the way you use the pseudonym parties. The actual generation of the pseudonym parties doesn't inherently, create any potentially linkable information over time. But, so linkability is a very important topic when considering applications or uses of these tokens, but isn't really an issue in the generation of the tokens itself, as long as they're, produced afresh periodically as intended.
So I'll do mine next. I think my question for you, do you agree with my statement that it's unlikely that there is a universal proof of personhood? It'll always be within a context, like, we were saying with Empire versus Rebels, you'd have a different DID, as we would call it, for each of them?
Yeah, good question. I think you always, from my perspective, I think you always want a context. Anytime you use one of these tokens, you always want that use to be in some context that by default is not linkable to any other context. And this is a self-sovereignty aspect that we want, beyond self-sovereign, attributes or uses of attributes to self-sovereign linkability, right? You want people to have control over the ways in which they do or don't link their pseudonyms or their uses of themselves either across contexts, in space or across the web, across different websites, across different Wikipedia pages. And also you want them to be able to control their linkage over across time. Are you the same real person, now as you were a month ago or a year ago? So the goal is to allow you to start over and either link yourself to your history or not link yourself to your history and start over.
Okay. So we're running out of time. Ken, is your question short, or hopefully the answer also? Go ahead.
Yeah. For me, it was focused on group formation, which is I saw that the idea is that you have a single group participating all at a single time, which is difficult to scale for multiple time zones. So how would that be addressed for multiple groups such that somebody can't join a group at different times and set up multiple different identities?
So we have some answer on slide 32, where you can have multiple parts a day, and then you can say, okay, now you need to have some threshold number of visits. So let's say you have all over the world at UTC plus 0, UTC plus 6, UTC plus 12, and UTC minus 6. You have 4 parties a day, and then you need to visit 2 or 3 parties. Now you need to visit 3 out of 4. And then as long as you visit 3 parties out of 4, you will get your token, which means you can choose which 3 are good for you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
That's one of a number of solutions we're exploring. There's no silver bullet, but it's kind of a complicated topic. Another is just to say synchronize these parties in a continent or something like that. So leaving the risk that someone who flies at just the right time to a different continent may be able to get 2 tokens, but that's hard and expensive to do, and hopefully not too many people will do that. But it's a complicated thing, and there are multiple answers.
Well, thank you very much for being here. I hope that you can continue to have a dialogue about this topic. A number of the parties in this community are actively developing products, variety of security approaches and differences in them that would lead to potentially really useful properties for your work. So. And we're shipping stuff, so I hope that you can stay involved and keep your ideas in. And thank you very much for sharing what your progress is so far.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again so much for the invitation. It was great to be here.
Okay, thank you very much.